case of the day, Malik Holdings v. English. Malik?
May it please the Court. Your Honors, a serious motion for sanctions requires a detailed analysis by the District Court. This case requires reversal because that simply did not occur in this case. In the underlying manner, the defendants presented three strong bases for sanctions in this case. First, we demonstrated that the filing of the lawsuit against me as the attorney for my clients violated the prescription of Badger Cab versus Soule, which is a public policy in Wisconsin that you may not sue your opposing counsel arising out of litigation. And that's exactly what occurred here. My co-counsel, who was required to come into the case, is Joseph Owens. He'll be addressing Badger Cab. The second basis that we presented was that the case was filed for an impermissible purpose. That impermissible purpose was to extort, effectively, the defendants, my clients, the plaintiffs in a state claim, to give up a default judgment and release garnished funds. That was not addressed by the District Court. The other basis was that the claims were objectively frivolous on their face, and I will address each one of those. Turning first to the impermissible purpose, this case was filed from the get-go with the objective of extorting my clients and myself and the process server to give up a garnishment that we had obtained arising out of a default judgment from a state court claim. So in the last case, they were talking about tennis courts. This case is a case involving a golf course. My client was a golf pro who was fired by his employer, the golf company, and we filed suit. The process server went to the corporate headquarters and handed a summons and complaint that was authenticated to the corporate controller at the corporate headquarters. That very same day, the corporate controller called the president of the corporation and said, "We've been sued." That exact same day, the president of the corporation called their attorney, Sean Lanfair, who advised them, "Do not do anything. I will monitor this case. I don't think our corporate controller is the proper person to be served." So 122 days went by, following no action, no answer of any kind by the defendant, then Malik Holdings II. We filed a motion for a default judgment, which was granted.
How was that arrived at, that $478,000 plus?
My client had a five-year employment contract as the golf pro. His salary was about $65,000 plus bonus, plus a percentage of the income of the club. He also was required to operate the golf pro shop, which had an inventory, and he would derive his own profits from that.
How deep into the 5 years were?
He was in his second year, Your Honor. And in fact, he and his wife were fired from the club after they went to his brother-in-law's wedding. All right. Following his termination, the Malik Holdings took all of the property, liquidated it, prevented my client from accessing the inventory. Therefore, we have such large damages, the length of the time and the profitability of the club. So the default judgment figure was accurate based upon real numbers. Nevertheless, you have to file an answer or do something when you get sued. They did nothing. So we filed a motion for a default judgment. It was granted. We began garnishment proceedings. That was my legal duty to do. Thereafter, I received a phone call from opposing counsel saying, "I'm going to sue you if you don't give up your garnished funds." I said, "I don't think so." The second thing that happened is I was sent a state complaint alleging fraud, that I had engaged in fraud on the state court in obtaining the default judgment. I responded with a letter informing Attorney Lanfair that this case, this alleged claim, was without basis. In fact, there was no fraud. We followed the procedures. Mr. Lanfair responded by retrofitting that state complaint into a federal complaint, now alleging Section 1983. I responded with a second letter the same day, indicating, number one, there was no jurisdiction for this claim because his remedy was in state court pursuant to the Younger Abstention Doctrine. Although I didn't say Younger Abstention Doctrine, I explained to him that, look, you should file a motion to reopen the default judgment, that remedy is available to you, and you have no jurisdiction in federal court.
This is the threat to file, or he actually filed?
This is before he filed.
Right. Okay.
And when he sent to me the federal complaint, he said, "This will be filed at 1 o'clock. My response letter was sent to him at 1:18, so I missed his deadline that he imposed upon me. But in fact, I did explain to him in my letter, there's no jurisdiction and there's no fraud here. You better be careful. We're going to seek sanctions against you if you proceed as follows. Undaunted, he filed his complaint. On December 9th, by the way, those two letters were on October 14th, 2004. I see that my light is on. On December 9th, I followed up with another letter indicating that this claim was out without basis.
What's the status of the state court at this point?
The state court, the default judgment was reopened.
At what point? What date?
It was reopened in October of 2004.
So well before all of the subsequent stuff in Fed.
It was. He obtained his remedy in state court within a week or two after filing it and continued to pursue the claim. Thereafter.
Was the federal court notified of this?
Yes.
By whom?
The federal court was notified by me. I had to advise the federal court, Your Honor, this motion for your TRO is moot because he obtained his result that he was seeking. Nevertheless, he continued and the judge actually ruled on the motion. I've got limited time, so I'm going to defer to my counsel.
Mr. Owens?
Thank you. Your Honor, the Wisconsin courts have been unequivocal that you cannot sue your opposing counsel in active litigation, that would foment and lead to spiraling litigation. That cannot be allowed. It would paralyze the legal system. And that's what has happened in this case. As you look at counsel table, the process server has an attorney. Mr. Milek has an attorney, Mr. Scott. Attorney Rydell represents the process server who was sued. I represent the young golf pro, Mr. English, and his wife who were sued because Mr. Milek has been sued and he has a conflict of interest. Automatically upon being sued, there has to be standby counsel. What purpose is served by filing in federal court? Why did that happen here? Because Mr. Lanfear knew he could not do it in state court and thought, because there is no case yet in the federal system saying you can't do this, he was going to do it and use the federal court as a club. And his letters state that, as Mr. Milek pointed out. His letters clearly state, if you reopen this default judgment and stop this garnishment, I will not sue you personally. Now, what about the Englishes? Why are they sued in this federal court action for a 1983 violation? Where is the state action here? Where is the state action? In fact, there's a case out of the Seventh Circuit that's in our brief. It says there is no state action when a private litigant files suit and uses court process. There is no basis for that. There's no violation of Section 1983. There's no state action. All these things were brought. Motions to dismiss were ultimately granted. I know one of the court asked October 21 of 04, let's see now, this default judgment was entered October 5th. The garnishee summons on the bank is served October 7th, and by October 21, 14 days later, the motion for the TRO has been withdrawn. The exigent circumstances that the district court found so important are gone. They're gone.
What happened October 21st? This is in state court?
In federal court.
In federal
court. Motion for this need for a TRO in federal court to stop the garnishment and stop the state court action is withdrawn by Attorney Lanfear. And October 26th, 3 or 4 days later, the district court denies the motion for the TRO. And by this point, Attorney Lanfear is clearly on notice that he doesn't need a federal court action. He has no exigent circumstances, which the district court relied upon in letting him off the hook here. This case then pended for another 16 months. Why? For what purpose? The state court had granted him his relief, which was vacating his default judgment, on, I believe, October 19th. And that's the date actually is in the briefs. So the continuation, which Rule 11 since the 93 amendments, prohibits the continuation of advocating after you are clearly on notice that you have no basis. That is the basis of the Rule 11 sanctions and all the attorney's fees that went into this defending. The Englishes have two attorneys, the process server, and in addition, Mr. Milek himself. Your Honor, this kind of conduct needs to be stopped. If 100 lawyers did this in the Northern District of Illinois, What would happen? If 1,000 did it, what would do it? And this made the newspapers in Milwaukee. The newspaper article is in the appendix. Thank you.
Mr. Lamphere?
Thank you. May it please the court. I have to clarify the sequence of events here. The sequence of events were that Mr. English was fired in September of 2003. In October of 2004, I learned that there was a motion for a default judgment and submitted under the five-day rule. Before I could submit any objection that service was improper, the court had already signed the default judgment. They went ahead and got a garnishment the next couple days. My client learned that his bank account had been frozen. My client could not pay the normal expenses, daily expenses, including payroll and taxes, without his checking account. I tried to get the trial court judge to get a hearing as soon as possible to vacate the default judgment. The soonest hearing I eventually got was October 21st. So my client was essentially running out of business with his frozen bank account. So I went into federal court to seek a TRO to stop the garnishment, not to overturn the default judgment. I knew I had to do that in state court. So on October, I filed and I think the sequence of events was I went in on Tuesday around noon, filed the complaint as I had warned Attorney Milek that I would, and then I got his letter saying that there's no jurisdiction in federal court. I disagree that his letter, well, his letter didn't cite any case law or anything like that. But as far as the sequence of events here, October 21st, we go in to the state court. The judge says, yes, service of process was deficient here. The affidavit of service was deficient. I am going to vacate the default judgment. That same day, I filed electronically a motion to withdraw my motion for a temporary restraining order. So counsel was wrong that the same day I notified the court that the default judgment had been vacated, I no longer needed a temporary injunction or a TRO.
But you did not file a motion to dismiss your case or to voluntarily
that is correct.
Dismiss in federal court when you got the relief you wanted in state court?
Yes, I got the relief I wanted in state court, but my client had incurred damages, and I explained that to Attorney Milek in a December letter that's part of the appendix. I explained to him that during the interim, my client had tax penalties and charges for bounced checks because his bank account was frozen. So he had been damaged by their pursuit of the garnishment. And I said, I'm going to pursue this case to recover those damages.
And his damages, I assume, exceeded what our minimum requirements are here. Oh, no.
No, they did not, because that had a 1983 claim.
That's right. It's a 1983.
My letter set out the damages as approximately $17,000. So that's all this case was about. The federal case was about $17,000 at that point. A number of motions were filed. Procedurally, I think that they procedurally did a number of improper things. First, they answered. Then they moved to dismiss. Then they simultaneously filed a Rule 11 motion. They did not serve it beforehand.
So let me just, on 1983, who were the state actors in this when you continued to file this federal case?
The state action was the garnishment complaint, which is in the appendix at 72, which is signed by the circuit court clerk in Wisconsin. So he had to go get a signed garnishment from them.
And you have some authority that says that 1983 reaches to the circuit court clerk who just signed something in his official capacity that he's authorized to do by the court? Isn't he protected by some kind of immunity?
That is the state action, and I cited the Snyder case in support of that. The Snyder case was a very similar garnishment action in Wisconsin where there was no question that there was some state action, as far as I recall the Snyder case.
Did you back up? You said that you were notified somewhere that there was a default judgment pending. and you had just 3 or 4 days to respond.
Correct.
And you knew nothing before that.
Correct. The sequence of events, well, I did know that there had been attempted service. I told my client that is improper service. Let's wait until we get proper service. And I tried to track to see whether they would ever file an affidavit of service. What happened is on October 1st, they filed by hand the motion for default judgment and dropped it in the mail to my client, who did not receive it until October 6th. The judges signed the default papers on October 5th. So even though I filed an objection on the 7th, I believe, 7th or 8th, I filed an objection to the default, the court had already entered the default judgment. So then I had to file a motion to vacate, which I did on the 13th and then was heard on the 21st, and the court agreed with me. This was improper service. They appealed that decision. The Court of Appeals agreed with the circuit court judge, saying this was improper service as well. So my advice to my client was correct. This was improper service. We did not have to answer. I think they obtained the state court judgment through their default motion through a canard, through an artifice that service was proper. Service was not proper. What happened as far as service goes is that the process server goes to one address. They say go to a different address. He goes to a different address. As for Kathy Hintz, he has no knowledge what Kathy Hintz's position is. He says, I have legal papers. She tells him, according to his own affidavit, she tells him, I am not authorized to accept service for the corporation. He then tosses the papers on the floor. That is improper service. You have to serve an officer, director, or managing agent. He did not question her whether she was any of those three, and it was improper service, as the Court of Appeals agreed and Judge Gempler in Wisconsin agreed.
And so there was no recourse for your client after he sustained these damages when his accounts were frozen in the state court? No kind of action that could be filed there?
I did have the pending federal court action.
I understand. I'm asking you, wasn't there a state court claim you could file?
And I did in that case.
File
a counterclaim in that case, trying to recoup those damages.
So what was the need to file to continue the federal court case?
Because that case was already pending, and it was separate. It was separate at that point. So after it was dismissed on federal jurisdiction grounds, then I filed the counterclaim in the state court case.
No, but you had the ability to file a counterclaim when you also filed a motion to vacate the garnishment. I mean, once you prevailed on the problem with service, you could have filed a claim in the Wisconsin state court.
True.
And
yes,
then this,
I could have.
And then this suing the lawyer of the...
On the suing the lawyer, I sued the person who was responsible for the garnishment action, which was Robert Milek, the attorney. The cases they cite, there are two cases that they cite on that issue. One is Badger Cab. What Badger Cab says, in the same case, in the Waukesha case, you cannot sue the attorney for fraud or for misbehavior in that same case. And I had not done that, and I have not done that. What I did is I sued him in federal court because he was the one who had caused the damages to my client by pursuing the garnishment action. As they say, this is an improper purpose. I think it was a very proper purpose. I wanted my client's accounts to be unfrozen. And I asked him, will you do this voluntarily? He said, no, I will not do it voluntarily.
And the district court didn't deal with any of these other grounds when it ruled on this Rule 11.
That's right.
None of these other grounds were addressed by the court.
That's correct. Why the court dismissed the complaint was on the Rooker-Feldman Doctrine. And the Rooker-Feldman Doctrine, as I think Judge Mannion has said in a case, Brokaw versus Weaver, is a complex situation.
I understand that, and I understand what the court's ruling was. But from this record, how can we tell that the district court gave consideration to all of these other potentially meritorious arguments for sanctions? Because that's really the question we're to deal
with
here.
Yes, that is the question. Did the district court do enough when it wrote its 10-page decision? My position is it did more than enough. It addressed the one ground that it dismissed my complaint on. It addressed the Rooker-Feldman Doctrine. Did I make a reasonable inquiry, or would a reasonable attorney bring this case based upon the Rooker-Feldman Doctrine? And it said, I did. And then the second point that it made is, did I file this in rushed circumstances, and that's an undisputed fact. I did file it in rushed circumstances. So given those two grounds, the court was not going to sanction me for what I did here. And I think that the Supreme Court decision in Exxon versus Saudi shows that I did make a good argument on the Rooker-Feldman doctrine. So legally, I was on good grounds. Factually, I was on good grounds. Both Judge Gempler in Waukesha County and the Court of Appeals in Wisconsin said service of process was deficient.
Mr. Lanfair, what was your good faith basis for believing that Mr. Mihalik was the perpetrator of the garnishment action?
Two things.
As opposed to a client directing it.
Two things. One is he was the man who filed the false affidavit of service by Mr. Robbins. And he told the court that there had been proper service. After that, after I told him that service was improper and described my understanding of service, he would not then stay the garnishment proceedings, which was putting my client out of business by freezing the funds. So my good faith was that, yes, Bob Mihalik, if you know that service was improper, or at least Judge Gempler should decide whether it was proper or not, why don't you stay this until Judge Gempler can decide it? He would not do so. So I had to do something to protect my client, to keep my client in business. I decided to go into federal court because Waukesha was not giving me any hearings that I wanted.
As to that, what was the difficulty in getting to state court with some dispatch after this conversation you had with Mr. Mihalik?
I called the clerk numerous times to try to get Judge Gempler's attention. My recollection was either he was sick or out of town.
Isn't there a daily motion call in the circuit court there?
No, you have to schedule a motion.
Is there no emergency judge?
I
assume judges from time to time are not there.
Sometimes when you go into Milwaukee County, there is a second judge when the judge isn't there. But this was Judge Gempler's case. I was trying to get it on as soon as I could.
You didn't try to go to a second judge?
I don't recall if I asked the clerk whether there was whether anybody else would hear this, but my recollection was that this was had to be in, they wanted it heard by Judge Gempler.
Who wanted it heard by
the clerk? The clerk wanted it heard by Judge Gempler.
Right, and the clerk controls your way you practice law?
Well, the clerk controls the judge's calendar. And
that judge's calendar?
Correct.
But not that, I assume the clerks speak to their particular judge. They don't control
my
judges.
My experience in Waukesha County was that it was difficult to get a hearing date with any judge.
How many circuit judges are there in Waukesha?
I would say about five or six.
I mean, did you believe that you would get greater relief quicker by the federal action than you would by getting a state court judge, some state court judge, to speak to this improper service?
That was my hope. That was my hope. I was in a box at that point.
Thank you, Mr. Lanfair.
Thank you. Thank the court.
It is now 25 months since this odyssey began, and we still do not know the answer to the fundamental question. What is false about the affidavit? He has never explained that. There is nothing wrong with the affidavit, and despite the fact that we've challenged him to present some evidence, there is nothing there. His response to this court was, look in the affidavits and you'll see for yourself. Your Honors, that is paper thin to have launched this crusade upon my clients and incur hundreds of thousands of dollars in attorney's fees to dispose of this case.
So this whole business of the service of the complaint, the process server going to the person, I don't recall her name right now, and then it just being thrown on the floor, there's nothing in the record, no affidavit that supports that?
There's the affidavit of the process server. When we filed for the default judgment, there's an affidavit in opposition to the motion to reopen, and there's an affidavit by Mr. Mihalik, the president of Mihalik Holdings, at page 58 of our appendix. He acknowledges that what they call the account manager was presented with a document. She was instructed to say, I'm not authorized to accept service of process. Now, in fact, in the past 2 years, she had accepted service of process four separate occasions. But on that particular day, she said, I'm not authorized to accept it. So the process
of
her...
And that was in the affidavit, her prior history of receiving service?
Yes.
And that was what was presented in your papers when you went for your default?
Yes. And she said, I won't accept them. That day, the president of the company was aware of it. It's in his affidavit. And he says, I immediately contacted our attorney, Sean Lanfear. I was informed it didn't constitute proper service. Nevertheless, they continued to go on and on and on in this case. The system simply cannot tolerate this. Thank you.
Thanks to all counsel. The case is taken under advisement.